members of Verpoets have all sorts of different backgrounds, that they're not by any means all arts graduates of one kind or another. For example, one of our most memorable members, Duncan Gardner, was an analytical chemist and was a fabulous poet and a very skillful one. You don't have to have an English degree to be a poet. You know, as Chris has shown, it comes to people of all sorts of different inclinations. You know, they can be scientists, they can be musicians, they can be geographers, but I suppose the common feature that they have is perhaps a certain way of looking at the world and this desire to start to communicate that. Perhaps that's where the arts element comes in, that, you know, you need to be someone who wants to share, unless you're going to write all these poems that are just going to stay in your notebook.
Do you have to know anything about poetry and the history of poetry and the different types of poetry and things about rhyme and metaphors and assonance and whatever else there is?
In a word, no. But I think that when you start actually doing it, unless you're just going to pour words on a page, if you like poems that are easy to write but hard to read, because, you know, it's all going on in your head, but what the reader is doing in this process is less clear, and it can be very confusing and unmemorable. It can be just boring.
I think you wouldn't get very far, really, as a poet without reading a little of someone else's work, because that's the way in which you start to understand what can be achieved and to have some aspirations of your own. Obviously, we can't all be National Poetry Prize winners. We have had National Poetry Prize winners amongst our membership, but I'm sure they didn't see themselves as such when they submitted their poems. They just thought, well, here's a competition, I'll enter it. The 2017 Ten Liners prize-winning poem was written by our long-standing member, Daphne Schiller. The Goblin Under the Stairs. The goblin under the stairs eats autumn hyacinths, has lavender breath from nibbling mothballs the rest of the year. Sometimes he wears our coats and muddles the gloves, or parachutes with an umbrella. When the meter man shines his torch, he hops in my bike helmet, closes his eyes. We never see him, as he's too clever. Perhaps he sleeps in my school bag, his head on a mildewed sandwich. Do you have to know the history of English poetry? Not as such, but if you've encountered one or two poems, say you've read some Keats or you've read some medieval lyrics, however you've come by them, just by joining a society and going to a workshop and finding that this is what you're going to be asked to do, is to write a little bit like this, or to take this idea as your starting point. It all feeds into...
Well, it does. It informs, doesn't it?
It does inform.
In all sorts of ways, even if you're not taking it in knowingly.
I think a lot of artists, and again, thinking about visual arts and music and so on, it starts with reading the work, seeing the work, witnessing the work. You think, I want to do that. Youngsters setting up a band, you know, as they often do in teenagers, they're not doing original work. They're doing work like their hero. And the old way of training artists was to say, OK, go in that studio. There's one of the great masters. I want you to spend the next 6 months copying. And I think that imitation is a very good way of starting. The normal way, really, you hear something and you think, oh, I'd love to do that. Yeah. I wish I could do that.
There are certain forms, for example, like a sonnet. People are still writing sonnets today, even though Shakespeare wrote them over 400 years ago. And there is a certain form. It needs to have a certain number of lines, and it needs to work in a certain way. Obviously, not as strictly as that might sound. You know, you can vary what you do within the 14 lines or 13 lines if you prefer. But the end product, someone will come along and read it and say, oh, I think that might be a sonnet for some reason. And that's because you have created something that has a particular shape, a particular form. And so there is a little bit of knowledge to be gained on your journey of writing. Because I think the other aspect of any writing journey is the subject matter. And the subject matter, one way or another, actually, although you're describing the tree outside your window, the other side of that is you're writing something about yourself. And that I think writing journeys are journeys of self-discovery through both your subject matter and struggling with the language and the different aspects of the poetic form and poetic techniques. That is a journey of personal discovery, or at least mine has been.
And even therapy.
And even therapy, absolutely. There's a very rich vein of poetry which is written by people in recovery from all sorts of different life experiences. It can be depression or alcoholism. In fact, there's a recent collection that has been written by a poet whose name I'm afraid I don't know, but has been presented as the work of a recovering alcoholic. So poetry does have a role to play in making people better.
Let's just talk about verb poets. Somebody comes, they have to come to a meeting. That might be quite difficult.
They don't need to come to a meeting. It started as a St. Albans society. Now lots of its members, I think probably the majority, don't actually live in St. Albans. I don't live in St. Albans. So you could, by post, join, send a cheque, and you're part of Verb Poets. And one of the things that we do there is to provide for a new entrant. We say, we'll give you feedback on six poems. Send us six poems, and we'll give somebody, it might be me, or it could be Anna, it could be anybody else, that you will get some feedback on this work and perhaps some suggestions about the way forward. We'll send them newsletters, they can look at the website. You know, we do the various sorts of things. So you don't have to, and if you live in France or in Glasgow, as some of our people who used to live in St. Albans, then it's a postal or electronic membership.
You mentioned newsletters there, Terry, and I do just want to say that one of the things that we provide, which not many other poetry societies do provide, is a newsletter which is published three times a year, which allows our postal members or our members who don't live within the vicinity of St. Albans to feel part of the organisation, so they've got page space.
One of the things about the newsletter is that people who are very new to writing will get their poems published or an article about their approach to poetry. So we share that.
They can submit an article. They could send in a poem. Mm. If they submit to a competition and they're reasonably successful, they will find that their poem is published. Mm-hmm. And so we work quite hard to make the society, although it's spread far and wide, we've had members in New York and in Greece and in France and in Ireland, Scotland, Wales. We are an international organisation and we try to make everybody feel a part, although the main body of our activity, obviously the readings, the workshops, do take place in and around St. Albans itself.
Mm. How often does that happen?
We run monthly meetings at St. Michael's Parish Centre of a Friday evening, which we'll get poets to read, we'll do a workshop activity, we do a range of things. So that's one branch, if you like, of what we do. The other is that we run every couple of weeks or 3 weeks, we run workshops in people's houses where maybe 5, 6, 7, 8 people will get together, share a poem, get feedback and so on and so forth. So there is that. And we do also other one-off events. For instance, National Poetry Day, which I think was April, we got a request from Nebworth Old People's Home to go and read to some of the residents. So I trolled off there and sat with an interesting range of people and read poetry there in their sort of living room, really. Yeah. I count none but sunny hours. Words on a Sundial by Daphne Gloag. Yes, I know about time, but I know only time that's bright, happy hours. So really, I'm lucky. But all the same, I worry, because I have no knowledge of those hours of cloud, that thing called dark. Time seems to stop for me then. Yet I've heard that things still happen. Pigeons coo and feed, make nests, people walk and talk, and in the dark, dream. So how can I find darkness? Discover its shape, explore its life. I want to know light's loss, the narratives of its going, the feel of its absence. I do not know what darkness has to say. It was funny because, you know, some people were asleep and, you know, were on all sorts of medications, and some people just sat there, listened intently, engaged. We do stuff at the request of other people in the community.
And we've held readings, I think, in pubs, haven't we? Local
yes,
pubs.
Yeah.
The pudding open stops. Mics,
yes, the pudding stop. Yes,
and open mics. Yeah, which is a good way of including other people or people new to poetry.
Pubs, restaurants,
the library, the local library as well.
The truth is anywhere. Give us a space.
Yes,
We'd take a street corner if it's available.
Absolutely, we would.
We've also taken our poetry to Lumen in King's Cross, which is in aid of the cold weather shelter.
That's right. We have.
My next poem is called Full Moon, and it was really inspired by a conversation I had with my father some years after my mother had died. Full moon. Even after 9 years, he whispers to her pillow, where beneath a folded nightdress lies, like silk roses under snow. Don't close the blind, she'd say, hungry in her 80th year for one more moon to rise above the poplars. When night sky's clear, he angles slats, allows cool light to frost the Beswick horse, hauling shadows along the windowsill. Wearily, he tells me, on a night like this, I want to sleep and never wake up. My reply, I keep evasive as Pegasus winging through cloud. But Dad, you'd miss the next full moon.
You have competitions as well, don't you?
Now, this is important, yes. But competitions, there is a big competition scene, actually, nationally. Mm-hmm. And we have an open competition, which is the sort of climax of our year, really. So people from everywhere in the world can send poems to be judged by that year's judge. And, of course, lots of the winners are not Verpoets members. They're from anywhere. They could be absolutely anywhere.
So any member of the public can submit.
Any member of the public. Yes. But we also do competitions for Verp members only, so free competitions. People have different views about competitions, but in a sense, people want to know, is it any good? Is this any good?
There's a little challenge there.
A bit of a challenge.
Yes. Yeah.
And of course, in any competition, like the World Cup, there'll only be one happy team at the end of it. And I think in a way, it's quite important that poets realise that their cherished work, it didn't make it. Unfortunately, it could have been that they almost made it. You know, they were the, you know, they would have made it had it not been for this other one or these other three poems. So that the feedback is a bit crude. But to be in there competing, I mean, I enter all sorts of competitions and mostly you get nowhere. It's a useful thing. You go back to look at your poem.
Yes.
Is it good? Look at the ones who won. Are the ones who won better? And normally you initially think, but on reflection, you look at, you know what, if I was choosing, that would go well ahead of mine. So an understanding of where you've, a bit of humility, which doesn't mean to say that your that work is rubbish, but it's someone else has done something that's a bit smarter, a bit more fun, a bit more profound, a bit more skilled, whatever it is that's brought the winner to the podium.
And you've got a competition in June.
That is the end of the open. In other words, that's the prize giving. Yes. So it closed at the end of April.
Sure.
And what we'll have is the prize winning poets will read their poems.
How is that, like the first three?
There are one to three, but we then produce an anthology of about 30 poems. So it could be up to 30 readers. It tends not to be, but it could potentially be. So we have a little anthology that we produce. So it's 30 winners, if you like. So that's a bit of a celebration.
Is your open competition annual?
Yes, it is. Yeah, that's been going.
The next lot will be in for next April, presumably.
It'll be for next April. So sometime during the autumn, we will ask a distinguished poet to be our judge. We'll put the publicity out. We'll get it out to libraries and put it on websites and send it out to poetry groups, writing groups around the country to try and get people to come and enter our competition.
Do you ever have somebody who put something forward completely out of the blue, that somebody that's never been heard of before, never joined a group, never done anything, and yet has come up with a masterpiece?
We have a lovely member called Roy Batt, who was a vet. So there he was working as a vet. And he was on a train and saw an entry for the Ver Open, or I think it was called the Michael Johnson.
Johnson.
Anyway, and he thought, oh, I'll have a go at that. And I don't think he won, but he was shortlisted. And that started his writing career.
Yeah.
normally people have done something before.
But the standard is really quite demanding in a way. Yeah. You need a bit of experience. That's not to say that you can't have just started writing poetry and have written a really good poem and sent it in and found that you're one of the 30, or you might be highly commended, or you might win second or third prize. Mm. So it doesn't always work that you have to have been writing for 20 years to write a prize-winning poem, but it does take some experience and some ability to write something that is going to stand out, because we get over 700 entries. Mm. So your poem, to be one of the 30, it's 30 out of 700. Mm. So that's quite a high bar has been set, I think.
Yeah.
Other competitions also draw in sometimes over 1,000 entries. So you know, for your poem to be in the competition booklet that's produced at the end, to be one of the 30 out of 1,000, that's quite a challenge.
Mm. Perhaps more importantly for Verne members, we always run a summer competition. This year we're doing rhyming poetry, so the only requirement for the poems to be sent in to us are that they rhyme.
Hmm.
Any subject, any length. Partly it's because some of our members really love and actually only write in rhymed forms. They're the minority, but there are some. But even those who don't generally write rhymed poetry sometimes like to have a crack at it to see what it's like. Mm. And it's tough. So that's what's going on at the moment.
And just before we finish, you do publish various collections.
We do. The one on the table here is the one that we produced for the 50th anniversary. It's called Wheel of the Stars. It actually is just the latest one. We have an annual 10-liners competition booklet, which probably has about 25, 30 poems in. And the Ver Open, we will always produce a small pamphlet of, again, about the 30 shortlisted poems.
How are these available? How can people get hold of these?
Well, they can get hold of them from our website, is the short answer. And we will pack it off to them. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. I'm sorry, we could talk for hours. Well, you could talk for hours. I would just sit and listen. Thank you very much for all the contributions. And I suspect you'll be coming back again.
Well, we'd love
to. Yes, we'd love to. We'd love to. Thank you very much.
And thank you also for your contributions of the poems that you've read.
And if you want to find out more about Ver Poets, just go to their website, verpoets.co.uk.